Birth Association and IndieBirth.com. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event.
Welcome to IndieBirth's series of podcasts here on iTunes, Taking Back Birth.
Hi, Marin here today, and I would love to share about self-care. Now, when I was beginning this podcast a few minutes ago even, I kind of thought I was going to call it self-care for midwives, but then I realized that was kind of silly, only because that's only a small detail of my life, really, and self-care is something I believe all people should do, all women should do, and you certainly don't need to be a midwife or really have anything particular going on other than being a human and wanting to get the most out of your physical experience and your emotional experience here. So as most of the podcasts do, there were a couple of things that aligned this week to make me want to share on this topic. The first is our students in our midwifery school are taking an entire 10-week course on self-care, taught by my amazing friend, Emily Graham. So I've been kind of peeking in on that class and curious for my own knowledge, you know, what they're up to and what the assignments are and what the reading is, because self-care is just a fancy word, really, for meeting our basic needs, I think. You know, there's so much offered to us, especially as pregnant women, when we are pregnant, that seems like it's special, like it's extra. You know, some things that come to mind are massage, for example. I think it could be argued that those kind of self-care things really aren't or shouldn't be optional, that they really are just part of taking care of ourselves. So as women, I know it's easy to act like these things don't matter, or we don't have time, or we don't have the schedule, or the kids come first. But I'm here today to share my journey of self-care, which is an ever-evolving journey, by the way. I certainly don't have this totally figured out, because I think it's important we talk about this as if it's a normal, everyday topic. It's not something special to take care of yourself. It's not something out of the ordinary or something unusual or reserved for only certain types of women or certain types of people. It's really just necessary in today's day and age. So on that note, I got thinking about my own routines, my own self-care. And of course, in there was a self-assessment. So that's an interesting place to start. You know, just kind of thinking about your own situation, your own life, whether you work in birth or not, doesn't really matter. And just inventory. And there's lots of ways to do that and lots of resources. But I was just going through it in my head, you know, am I meeting what I need physically? Am I meeting what I need emotionally? Am I getting what I need spiritually? And that was just kind of how I made the outline for this podcast. So I'm going to share my experience. And again, it's not because I'm special or this is the way to do it and this is the way to have great self-care. I'm not even professing that I necessarily do have great self-care. I think it's pretty decent, but I think I could make improvements just like most of us could. So again, just a topic of conversation. And like I often say on these podcasts, if we were all in a room together, it would be not about me. It would be a discussion, a conversation about how we all take care of each other and ourselves. So I always welcome hearing from people, especially after they listen to these podcasts. I'd love to hear what you do and how you take care of yourself, because that helps me take better care of myself. So I was thinking back on self-care in my life, really, which is something you might want to do. Just, I was thinking, when did that start for me? When did I start caring about myself in the way of taking care of what needed to be taken care of? So I was, again, reflecting on that. And what I came up with for me is that something like physical self-care has always been a part of my life. And I'm going to talk more about that in a little bit. But I really thank my dad, actually, for inspiring me with a regular physical care routine from the time I was tiny, 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 tiny. So I'll talk about that in a minute. But as my life went on from childhood, I realized that self-care became an important part of my life when life got stressful, which I think is a pretty common thread. Although I think many people, when faced with a lot of stress, can easily turn the other way. And I'm sure I've done that too at various points in my life. So in other words, life gets super stressful, and the first thing to go is taking care of yourself. So again, I was reflecting, and for me, being a musician many years ago was when I really started to care how my body was being treated, how my mind was reacting or responding to things, how my emotional state played in, and how I could make the best of all of those things to get the best results. So that's a funny way of putting it, maybe, but ultimately, I think that's what self-care is we want the best results for ourselves in our lives. And so at this period in my life, this was probably about 20 years ago, I was a classical musician, for those that don't know. So I spent many, many years in school, in music conservatory, and then after many years of my life, you know, being a professional and playing music and having very stressful things happen. Although compared to birth, I think it's funny. I don't necessarily see music as being stressful now, but my body felt otherwise. So if you don't know, and many people don't, being a classical musician in particular is very stressful. It's no different in my estimation than being an actor or a professional dancer. You know, I think most people have a sense of like how grueling the arts can be on a human spirit and human body. And, you know, those extreme stories, right, of like artists gone mad, like Vincent van Gogh comes to mind. So just this idea that artists really can sacrifice themselves to their art. And I would say as a group, they have some of the worst self-care that I've ever seen. And I can say that from, you know, having been a musician myself and obviously having many friends that are and still were and still are. And it's the first thing to go because they self-sacrifice often in favor of their art. And I know for myself, I was practicing, I played the oboe, and I was practicing up to 8 hours a day. And this is all before kids, by the way. I don't know how on earth I could possibly manage that now. So it's probably good I had a career path change. But anyway, it was a very stressful lifestyle. So practicing 8 hours a day, and really the goal was perfection, which I think shapes a lot of my ideas actually about birth and midwifery in a positive way. But in music, it was all about perfection and not really leaving a lot of room for the natural process, ironically, but being like a machine. So, you know, my life consisted of not only many hours of practice, but reed making, which oboe players make their own reeds. And it's really a crazy art and science, enough to make anybody go mad for real. It's very intense. And an oboe player could spend 8 hours practicing the instrument and then easily another couple of hours a day making reeds. So on top of that, most classical musicians, unless they just are really successful freelancing or just doing kind of like odd music jobs around, which is possible in bigger cities, but most of them go to school and then want to get a full-time job in an orchestra. So I was no different, and trying to obtain one of these jobs is one of the most highly sought after opportunities in the field. So just to give you a frame of reference, we would, you know, go to school, obviously, for all these years, practice billions of hours. And then upon graduating, or even before, we would look every month for available jobs all over the world. So, you know, jobs all over the world to play the oboe in an orchestra. And there might be just 5 the whole year. And that was on a good year. So very little job opportunity. So very little way to make money. And super stressful situations. So if you actually went to one of these auditions, and some of them would pre-screen people even, so you would have to get invited. So you'd either get invited, which was stressful on its own, or you would just show up to kind of a cattle call type audition. And then you would get your couple minutes to prove your worth and, you know, either make it to the next round or not. Extremely, extremely stressful. And I think I've talked about it in other podcasts, like many of the colleagues I had, you know, would even get on medications or beta blockers to ensure that their nerves weren't in full force during such an important audition. I never did that kind of stuff. That just wasn't my thing. And, you know, I obviously got out sooner than later in life. So it isn't something that I've done in the last 20 years. So anyway, I guess I'm trying to paint the picture of extreme stressfulness for the sake of this podcast. But that's where my self-care came in, because I realized really quickly that in these really high-pressure situations, I would quickly crumble, just like most people would, because playing an instrument like that takes a lot of stability and grace, and you can't be nervous. You can't be obviously nervous, or it'll sound like it. So there were lots of changes I would realize my body was going through to be able to adapt to these situations. So self-care became really important during those years. And just to keep it brief, since I've been blabbing on about it for a while, I continued a lot of the physical care I'll talk about, but I added in things like yoga and meditation and breathing and exercises I would do to retain any sense of calm that I could. And then, of course, I would try and translate that and take it into auditions. And, you know, self-care was a huge part of essentially success as a musician. So I did land a couple of jobs as an oboe player during those years. Nothing super major, lots of freelance work, but it proved to be worth it, even though it was a lot of work to have a self-care routine. So fast forward 20 years later, and here I am, 8 kids later, and a busy midwife, and obviously doing all of the indie birth work and our indie birth midwifery school. So yes, it is a very full load, as they say, and I am again at a point in life where self-care is very necessary. So the couple things I think that make up self-care for me, and again, this doesn't have to be you, but just sharing my experience. First is ritual. We've been talking a lot about birth rituals in our school lately, but by ritual in this sense, I mean things that have routine, that are repetitive, that have a rhythm, and that has always been a part of my life. And that might sound funny because as a midwife, there's lots of unknowns, really. There's really not knowing when the phone will ring or when a baby will be born. So I think it actually makes perfect sense to be so tied to my routine and ritual as I can. Now, I also have to learn how to be flexible, as most people do in life. So sometimes you can't stick to your routine, you know, if a baby's being born, for example. But having these regular things that occur and making time for them in my life and insisting upon them sometimes really is how I cope with the unknown and how I cope with just life being busy and crazy and needing to take care of myself. So this sounds kind of preachy, but I'll just say that I have learned over my years in life that if we don't put ourselves first, it really doesn't happen. And I know even with the pregnant mamas that I work with, I do suggest self-care and, if nothing else, a brief period every day that's just for you. Now, what you do with that time is up in the air. Some people maybe need some more concrete suggestions, but even just sitting by yourself for 15 minutes a day, no kids, no phone, no noise, no nothing, is a huge part of just clearing space for what may need to come. If you don't give yourself the time to take care of yourself, no one else will. And I say that as someone that has an extremely amazing and supportive husband. It's still true. And I feel the same way, honestly, about, you know, other people's self-care, even my husband, who's amazing. I don't generally say to him, you know, hey, go take time for yourself today. I could, But I feel that that's up to him as well, and up to him to find a time for. So I don't think anybody can do it for us. I don't really think we need permission from anyone. I don't think we can really get permission from anyone else to take care of ourselves. And I see it a lot, of course, with women, that many of us are waiting for that. We're waiting for someone else to clear the table. We're waiting for someone else to say what's true, which is you work really hard, life can be stressful, you're really busy, you need to take care of yourself first. But I don't see that that's really going to happen. And honestly, I've stepped away from expecting anyone to ever say that to me. I know that I'm the only one that can do that for me. And I really do think there are ramifications of not doing that. Whether it's just people that run themselves ragged or get burnt out, or really some worst case scenarios like serious physical illness. I do think there are serious things that can result in our not putting ourselves first. So self-care for me, like I said, is made up of a couple different components, and I feel like they're all important. I was trying to weigh in my mind before this, do I think some are more important? And I know that I don't give equal attention to all of them. So that's something just really normal, I think, and probably for you too. Like even if you have it broken down, there just seems to be some that are easier to do, right? Like it's easier to maybe go out and take a walk than it is to do something along the lines of your spirituality. Or maybe it's the opposite for you. So I feel like they should have pretty equal attention, but I see in my life that they don't necessarily. So, we're not finished products, I don't think, at any given point in time. As long as we're here on Earth, we're always working and ebbing and flowing and finding ways to modify, finding ways to improve. It's just part of being human. So I'm okay with that, but it is helpful to look at what you're doing. So the first component of self-care for me, which I've already mentioned a couple times, is the physical part. And this is the part that comes the easiest to me. So that's probably why I've mentioned it already. It's the part that I really do sort of get done every day because I can feel the difference when I don't. Especially with births coming up, we've been really busy here locally. So for me, that means a couple of births a month without any end in sight, which is awesome, but also means that I have to be totally on top of my own health, right? For the obvious reasons. I don't want to burn out. I don't want to be tired. I want to be able to give my full attention to these women when it's time and to my family, of course. And I don't want to get sick. I don't want to have to deal with anything that will make it harder for me to juggle all the things that I'm juggling. So physical comes up first. Food, of course, is a huge part of physical care. And I'm not telling anyone how to eat or what to eat. It's not that. I think it's just finding what works for you, whatever that is, and going with it. And honestly, this isn't a huge challenge for me. I have other things that are more of a challenge, but I'm pretty much a stickler, so to speak, when it comes to food. I don't find myself really wanting to go outside of that box a whole lot, just because I usually don't feel good if I do. So staying on top of the foods that make me feel good in some kind of rhythm is what I have found works for me. I try to do like a green juice every morning that I make, and from there on, just trying to stick to whole foods and not a lot of grains and not a lot of sugar or really any sugar at all. And I'm super grateful to be able to feel that way. Having been pregnant a lot in the last couple of years, pregnancy has me in a whole different place. So this is the postpartum way that I take care of myself. And it really is a lot easier. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. You really do have to eat kind of around the clock in pregnancy, and it gets old and tiresome for everyone. And I'm just grateful to not be in that space anymore. Yes, I can eat when I'm hungry, but I don't have to do any more than that. I know it feels good to my non-pregnant self, so I just go with that. Again, not going outside of that box is really helpful to me. Sometimes, you find yourself out and about with birth work, right? You're waiting on a labor or you're in between visits. So I try to do my best with not eating any fast food or really any junk. I'll bring food, I'll pack food, I'll pack a cooler if I have time and if I have to, just to kind of keep myself on what works for me rather than, you know, going off track. Supplements are another part of physical care, and again, those would vary for everybody, but just staying regular with any kind of routine that you have that makes you feel good. And that's pretty obvious, I think, but again, I think it's also really obvious that we can get off in that way and sometimes not realize it. So when we're not feeling physically great or really tired or whatever the complaint is, I think that's the first place to look. Like, what am I doing? Am I sleeping? Am I eating? Are those things going well? Or do I feel like I'm having trouble there? Rest is certainly a part of physical self-care. And that is something else that I'm really routine about. And again, everyone's different. Some people are morning people. Some people are nighttime people. And that's all fine. I have always been a morning person. I'd rather get up early and get things done rather than stay up late. So I have a pretty natural but strict sleep schedule. I'm usually in bed by 9 o'clock and usually up by 6 or 7, which is quite a lot of sleep. You know, I realized this morning, it's like, wow, I was in bed for 10 and a half hours. Now, of course, I'm nursing a baby half the night, so we all know what that means. But that often can feel really good to do that. And I am not tired when I wake up and I have energy and it's worth it. So my next little bit is on movement, and which I do in the morning. But if I don't get to it in the same way once in a while because I've traded sleep for it, then I don't beat myself up about it. And that's something that's definitely come with age. When I was younger, especially when I didn't have kids, I was really, really committed to a routine of intense movement in the morning. And if I missed it, I just kind of felt bad about myself or felt guilty. And I don't anymore. If I choose to sleep, then I do it because I need it. And I know that that's the best thing. So yay for aging, I suppose. So the next category is movement. And this is another one that is front and center for me because I really enjoy it. I don't know what advice I would necessarily have if movement is something that you just hate or can't do, other than saying that doing little bits is awesome too. You don't have to, in my opinion, spend hours a day. Most of us don't have hours a day to, you know, do physical workouts or whatever it is. So little bits and pieces, even broken throughout your day, can really improve your energy and have you sleep better and just overall make you feel better. So here's where my dad comes in again. I had mentioned him early on. My dad, from the time I can remember anything at all, would get out in the morning and run. And like I said, from the time I was teeny tiny, I basically can't remember a time when he didn't do this. So obviously when I was tiny, I didn't go with him. I just knew that that was his routine. He would go in the morning and, you know, by the time I was done with breakfast, he would be back. As I got older, I would go with him. So I have memories as a teenager of riding my bike alongside of him or whatever it was. And then when I was a little bit older, and I think a YMCA had opened in our town, he would go there to work out and I would go with him. So this idea of physical movement as the first thing we do in the morning is something, again, that I really, really love my dad for. And I should probably tell him that. Again, I've told him that. It's just, that was a really awesome thing to see as a kid. And in turn, my kids have seen that, every single one of them. So really, from the time I've been 13 years old, I've always gone out in the morning. And the type of activity, of course, has varied over the years through pregnancies, postpartums. As I mentioned, I used to be more of a hardcore runner or athlete. And after sustaining a bunch of injuries back in my pre-kid days, I'm not so much a runner anymore, although I do occasionally. I really just spend time outside hiking. You know, really fast walking or hiking up mountains is pretty good workout. And really, my goal is just to get out. It's not to be a super athlete. It's not to, in my mind, burn calories or, you know, anything like that. It's simply because that is my routine. That is my mental peace, peace as in, you know, serenity. That is my often emotional and spiritual peace as well. So yeah, that would be my number one recommendation if someone asked, as far as making time for yourself, just get out in the morning. And I know there's so much that many people feel like they would need to clear to be able to do that. So baby steps, right? You know, you have to have someone home with the kids, or it has to be at a time before people leave for work or whatever it is. But I think in a lot of cases it can be done. It's just something that maybe we don't stretch ourselves to do or think is possible. I've been known to get up, well, in not for a while, probably when I only had a couple of children, but, you know, at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to do that because it felt good and because it can get so hot here, really, that getting out earlier is better. But anyway, just some encouragement to make that part of your day if it sounds like something that would work for you, that even 15 or 20 minutes out is better than nothing. So for me, like I said, since I've been about 13, I've done this. I don't think I've missed really that many days in over 25 years. Obviously, when I'm resting after a baby, I don't get out and walk or do anything in the mornings. And I'm sure I've been sick or whatever along the way where I haven't gotten out. But really, most days of my life I have, even when I've been away or traveling or, you know, somewhere else, I've always made the space for that. And back in my younger days, we moved a lot, my husband and I, and walking or running around the neighborhood or exploring the area that way was always my way to learn the roads. Rather than driving, you know, there's so much you can see, people you can meet. So that I just could not say enough about. And if I didn't have that in my life, I really think I would be seriously ungrounded with the lack of activity going on. So I get out every morning and I make sure that Deva is nursed and I can leave her for up to an hour. And she's here with my husband. My kids know that they do not come ever. A very rare thing that might happen is maybe I'll bring somebody along if they want to ride their bike, just as my dad did with me. But honestly, my kids aren't even up that early, so it's not really a thing. And most of them don't really want to come, and they know that it's just my time. So I head out with a couple of dogs, and that's also part of my routine of just having animals. I love the sound of silence on the trail and just being with the dogs because obviously they don't talk. So it just depends how I'm feeling in the morning. But I think there's lots of ways to take care of yourself with a variation like movement. So, you know, sometimes you might incorporate music just because that's how you're feeling and you're alone and you can listen and process emotions perhaps that way. Other mornings, I kind of will force myself to not if I'm not on call, which is rare, to leave the phone home and to just be out on the land in the desert with quiet. You know, there's just so much amazingness that happens when there is no noise, or there's just the noise of birds chirping, or like I said, dogs panting. So that to me is just a beautiful, beautiful time of the day. I have found a lot of peace in those moments. And really, a lot of ideas come at that time. A lot of, you know, connecting the dots comes with whatever might be going on in life. I just couldn't say enough about that time of the day. Once in a while, or maybe a couple of times a week, I'll also use it for maybe fitting in a phone call with Margot, for example. But really, I try and keep that minimal because that is my time. And I love talking to my friends and my sister, too, will often call at that time of day. And like I said, it's just a matter of balance. So sometimes that feels good. It works out. Maybe I'm not going to be walking that long. Or maybe I have another opportunity for some time alone. But I don't like to just give it away to phone calls if that's all I'm going to get. And many of you, I'm sure, can appreciate that on a busy day with kids and life, you know, that 15 minutes, that half an hour, that hour, if you're lucky, is really all that you have. some days. So that is my routine. And I really just follow my intuition as far as that goes. It is super hot here in Arizona. So like I said, if I get out later than I want, then I might kind of cut it short, or, you know, I might take a different route, or some mornings I might feel really great and energetic and really make it long, and know that everybody's fine at home, everything's good, that I can take that time. And if I don't take that time, pretty much it shows up in my life. So I have learned that, and that's the way it goes for me. So let's see. I think emotional and spiritual self-care is, like all of these, highly variable, highly personal. And again, not sharing this because you should do any of these things, just sharing because that would be cool if somebody shared. I think I'd love to hear what everybody's up to. I do spend some time journaling every morning as well. So if you couldn't tell, mornings are my time. That's when I have that chunk where the kids are still sleeping, most of them. And my husband is just really awesome. And he knows that this is how it goes. Like, it's just been like this for so long that I think we've all adapted. So I think there's a certain amount of training, in the most positive sense of the word, that can be done with family members for them to all honor what you're after, which again could just be your 15 minutes. But you know, there's a balance too, of course. And when he wants to get out for a walk or whatever, of course, I find a way to make that fit for him. So I like to journal in the morning if I'm feeling like I want to. And again, the morning hike is kind of part of that. If I can have a quieter hike or more of an introspective hike, I might come home with stuff I want to journal about, or who knows, sometimes I outline podcasts on my hikes for real. And so that's part of it. And then later in the morning, and this is all happening in like a span of 2 hours, by the way, I'm not taking like 4 or 5 hours to do this every day, an hour or two at the most. I also like to spend the 15 minutes breathing, as I have already expressed. So there is kind of a method to that. And I talk about this book, The Presence Process, a whole lot, just in real life. And I'm sure I've mentioned it on podcasts before, but that's an awesome resource if you're looking at this kind of work and self-care. So he, the author, Michael Brown, outlines a 15-minute breathing practice at the beginning and end of your day. And honestly, I don't always get to the evening one, but I almost religiously do the morning one. So it's just 15 minutes. And as he says in this book, how could you not have 15 minutes for yourself, right? It's almost ridiculous, all the excuses that we make why we don't have time. But the truth is, I make excuses just like everyone else. And that's why I need this routine. I need to have something that I do that there isn't room for me to negotiate with myself. Because something as simple as 15 minutes can easily not fit if I allow it. And the 15 minutes is just spent in silence. In this case, of course, there's many ways you could spend your 15 minutes. But in the case of this example, 15 minutes. So I put the timer on. I sit here. I close my eyes. And it's really just feeling what comes up. It's not a detailed meditative practice, although that's an option. It's not prayer or anything else, although those are options. It's just feeling where you're at. And I think that's why it's hard to find 15 minutes if you approach it that way. It's hard to sit and feel what you're feeling, but that's the time of day that I really force myself to do that. So I just feel what's coming up. You know, am I feeling anxious today? Am I feeling fearful? Am I feeling great? Am I feeling happy? Am I feeling joyful? Just what are the feelings that are surfacing in my body? And then that gives me kind of my space for the day. I know if I'm already feeling anxious or something, then my day is likely to play out in a more frazzled way as a result of that anxiousness, unless I acknowledge it. So that to me is a really important part of self-care. It's not about fixing yourself. It's not about, you know, even making yourself better. It's just acknowledging where you are, where you're at, what you're feeling. And I think that's a really cool way to go into your day, you know, just consciously, not because you're perfect, just because you're being conscious of what you're feeling and what's coming up. But really, you can only do this in a quiet space. This is not something that you can do while you're doing 10 other things or feeding children. There has to be a space, again, even just 15 minutes, a space where there's no distractions and you can really just sit and be. So I think there's a lot of possibility there, as maybe some of you are starting to create a self-care routine, or just, you know, not even something as big as that, just creating little opportunities throughout the day to take care of yourself, to acknowledge that that is really, really, really important. And without that, it's really hard to do anything in the world. It's hard to take care of kids. You know, it's that old saying, right? Like, if mama ain't happy, nobody's happy. And I think that's really, 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 really true. Let me see if I have anything else. Oh, so when I do the 15 minutes of breathing, of course, like everyone, mostly, unless you're an experienced, you know, meditator, breather, there's millions of things running through my mind. So often before I do the 15 minutes of breathing, I'll make a list of that stuff. Like, I'll just let it surface in my head and, oh, I need to call this person to do this, or, oh, this is happening tomorrow. So all the mental chatter, if I can get it out on a list before, I'll do that. That way I can just sit in the 15 minutes and feel what's coming up. And with what's coming up, sometimes there will be things I didn't even realize that maybe I wanted to do or work on, or things come up about mamas I'm working with, or who knows what it is. But it's just a great time to, again, like, let everything surface before you spend some time caring for yourself. Another thing I think that is a key part of self-care for me is figuring out where you can reduce stress. Now, that's kind of a big topic, and I don't know that I even have a huge long list. I feel like I probably need to think more about that and feel more into that, because stress is just a part of life, really, right? And it's really how we view the stress. So again, thinking about how everything is so stressful can make it more stressful, but then acting like there is no stress can be stressful. So I don't know. I think just being real about the things that feel like they're weighing on you and figuring out how to handle that, how to balance it, who to ask for help, who to ask for support from is a cool thing to do. And one thing that came up for me for sure that is very stressful feeling that I don't need in my life when I'm super, super busy, especially, and when I'm trying really hard, right? This is like a lot of blabbing on about taking care of myself because it's hard. It's hard in a way of creating the space and then making it happen. So something that comes up that I don't need is a lot of technology. And maybe that's ironic as I'm recording a podcast, but I don't need to be online to record a podcast. And actually reducing my social media time, reducing my online time has changed my life. And I think that's good and not bad, but it's like it has definitely positive ramifications and some things that I wish weren't true. So I really do enjoy social media. Most people listening to this have come to Indie Birth through Facebook, through Instagram. And so I so appreciate the platforms that we have and that we've been given. And I want to use them really efficiently and well. So we continue to do that with Indie Birth. But personally, it just is a time suck. And I know that there are so many people out there that agree. It's just we're all caught in this dilemma of having it be often valuable as far as community and connections. So again, just checking yourself has been helpful for me. Like, how am I using it? Is there a way that I can get more out of it in the sense of these connections I want? What am I really going for? And something that came up for me, which is super obvious, is it would be nice to have more in-person connections, right? Like, isn't that really what we're all after? I don't think any of us would choose to be at a computer and correspond with people all the time if we didn't have to. So focusing more energy on local connections has made me less exhausted. There's something about technology and social media that is exhausting. And I think, you know, it's not crazy. I'm sure it's out there somewhere that they really do you know, affect your brain. Like, there's this enormous amount of addiction being put into our attention with social media. And I could totally feel that. Like, I'll be the first to admit it if you're not. Like, it's extremely addicting. So what I do with Facebook in particular is I just lock myself out for days at a time. And that sounds so silly, but I'm just admitting that it's hard to not. You get a conversation going with someone, or you want to check your messages even, or obviously we have a ton going on with Indie Birth. But anyway, here I am justifying really why I would need to feel compelled to do that, which is ridiculous, but just being honest. So I lock myself out. There's a really cool app called Self Control. That's hilarious, is it not? Self Control app. So yes, you just put in the name of the website or websites you want to be excluded from, and you can lock yourself out for up to 24 hours. Honestly, I wish I could do it for longer, because then I have to, you know, reset the app. So anyway, that might all sound super ridiculous, but it's a huge part of self-care. And when I can distance myself from social media and kind of the vampirism that exists there, and I don't mean that like as far as the people go, it's just kind of this entity that sucks energy. I feel so much better, and I have more time in my life, for real people. And I have more time in my life to take care of myself. And again, it helps with that level of exhaustion that I don't think is just me. That level of exhaustion that comes from being online and like communicating and arguing and posting and what did this person say and blah, 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 blah. It just is, I think, one of the really negative sides of that whole thing. So I've limited myself to just a couple times a week. I log in, I check messages, I'll check out the Indie Birth groups, post a couple things and get off. And that is it. And that has just worked amazing wonders for my own self-care. And obviously there's work to be done, in my case, and in many of you have similar situations, whether it's your own business or whatever, like there are things that need to happen, that need to get done, but I have a list and I get them done and I don't feel overwhelmed. My email box for the first time in probably 15 years is nothing. Like, I have two emails in there right now. So I make time every day to answer the emails right away, get them out, delete them, bye-bye, done. And, you know, there's just something really freeing about a clean email box, right? It's the feng shui of 2017. So, not just having your house in order, but having your computer in order is really freeing. So on that funny note, I think I'm done here. Thanks for letting me share about how I've found to take care of myself. Like I said, it's certainly not the be-all and end-all, and things shift and change, and I'm open to that too. But it certainly is nice to have a couple of concrete things that I know work for me. That way I can stay sane and present and all of those good things that we are all trying so hard to do. So I'd love to hear from you as well. You can always email me, Marin@indiebirth.com, and I can assure you I'll get back to you probably really about that email box. But anyway, check out the Indie Birth site for new information and content. Something we do have coming up that I wanted to mention is the Indie Birth Midwifery Skills Workshops. We have these a couple of times a year, so it's just indiebirth.com/workshop. And we'd love to see you if you're interested in studying midwifery or assisting a midwife, or even if you just want to come and learn because you want to learn. That's a perfectly valid reason. Check out that link. All right. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.